Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. And in Gorgeous Well-being today, we are so lucky to have Megan Ramos with us, who is the author of The Essential Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Donna.
Can you introduce us to intermittent fasting? I think in the last couple of years, especially for older women, I'm postmenopausal, there's been the idea that this can really help with balancing out hormones and weight issues. But if you wouldn't mind introducing us to a general idea of what intermittent fasting is and why, and how you came to this, we'd be fascinated.
Yeah, absolutely, Donna. So when you're electing to fast, it is something first and foremost that you are electing to do. Everybody always asks, what's the big difference between fasting and starvation? Well, present day first world countries, most of us tend to be overnourished. We have an abundance of body fat. And when we're fasting, we're voluntarily electing to abstain from food so we can use those body fat stores. Essentially, our body fat is just stored fuel that we never use because nowadays we have access to food all of the time. I know here, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I can get groceries delivered in 15 minutes. I can get Uber Eats to my front door in 15 minutes or less. Food is just absolutely abundant. And we're a lot more sedentary than we've ever been throughout human history. We all have to actively schedule in exercise. So we're constantly refueling our gas tank without emptying it in the first place. So then we end up accumulating excess fuel and fat cells, and then we get more fat cells to accommodate the excess fuel. So when we're fasting, we're voluntarily electing to abstain from food so we can access the fuel sources and burn through that body fat. But that's sort of a very elementary look at it. Primarily, what we do when we fast is we abstain from food for a certain period of time in order to lower the hormone insulin long enough to enable us to burn body fat, but also lower it long enough to allow for some cellular repair to happen in the body. Our diet, this westernized processed food diet, causes our bodies to produce these toxic levels of the hormone insulin. And everything in the body is about finding a balance. We know that too little insulin results in juvenile type 1 diabetes, and that's very problematic. Individuals with that condition do have to rely on insulin injections for the rest of their life. But we also know that an abundance of insulin, overproducing the insulin in the body, becomes toxic. And over time, it leads to some cellular damage between our own insulin and the many, many cells in our body. And that results in a condition called insulin resistance. And this leads to the development of things like polycystic ovary syndrome, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and type 2 diabetes, along with many other symptoms of metabolic syndrome. So when we're fasting, not only are we lowering the insulin levels long enough to be able to access our body fat stores. Insulin's kind of like the soldiers in the body that protect our body fat from being burnt. So we've got to lower it to access it. But we also enable for some cellular repair to happen by not constantly bombarding ourselves with the production of producing insulin in response to food. And then this enables us to have a better response to our own insulin when it's secreted in response to food. So we get better glucose metabolism. So what we see is, we started 12 years ago. It was so wild. Time has really flown by. But we had patients in our initial cohort that were on insulin for over 30 years. I was only 28 at the time. So this is mind-blowing to me that 12 years ago, we had a handful of these patients who had been on insulin for 34 years, and we were able to get them all off of insulin within 3 months. I still stay in close contact with many of those patients today. 12 years later, they're still off of insulin. So we are really able to reverse metabolic disease and recreate healthy individuals again through fasting.
Can I ask you a question about that cellular repair? In a simplistic way, is it a little bit like sleeping too, like so that your cells aren't constantly sort of, oh my God, I'm so busy and I've got new incoming and now I got to do this and now I got to do the other thing. But it you need time if and if they don't have that rest in dealing with new information and incoming chemicals and whatnot, that they need that time to sort of do their sort of admin.
Yeah,
internal admin.
Absolutely. When I met my husband, I'm from Toronto. My husband's from the San Francisco Bay Area, and we met in Orlando, Florida at a mutual counterparts engagement party. So it was, we're married. We've been married for almost a decade now. So it was meant to be. But we had this long distance relationship for the first year of dating and the first year of our marriage. And we were very fortunate. We got to see each other every 2 or 3 weeks. So we'd see each other every 2 or 3 weeks for these long weekends, very lovely. But we had these nice big breaks from one another in between. So it's approaching our 1 year anniversary. He's able to immigrate to Toronto. And my mother and her friends and my aunts, they all laughed. They said, you guys need to talk about like boundaries and him getting his own hobbies when he moves here, or you guys are just going to kill each other. You're so used to it being a whole lot of you time and then a whole lot of personal time. So you need to find a balance. And I just kind of rolled my eyes at them. Well, 3 months into living together, we had to sit down and have a talk about how absence can make the heart grow fonder. And that's really kind of what we're trying to do on a cellular level. Give them the cells the chance to have that break from our insulin, allow them to rest and recover. And then when they do get presented with our insulin again, it's like, oh, hey, I like that stuff. I'm going to utilize it again.
I missed you.
It sounds so simple, but it's so true. And we see it all the time. Every day I get to go to work and I get to hear someone come off of a diabetic medication when they told that they were going to eventually die from this chronic progressive disease, which is totally not true. It's a really rewarding work.
And you came to this work from a very sort of very personal drivers. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, about your mom and your experiences?
Yeah, my mother has the most horrific health history, mostly due to genetic disorders, and not even a lot that she could have controlled through lifestyle factors. So she became very sick when I was young, and I grew up in hospitals. The interest in preventative medicine came to me very early on. And when I was 15 years old, I had a chance to work in this phenomenal nephrology group. So nephrology is the study of kidney disease, where, of course, they did tons of pharmaceutical studies, but they also used a lot of the profit from that to fund lifestyle interventions and preventative medicine. So I was very fortunate to be put in this situation. And I love the patients in nephrology. Unfortunately, and fortunately, you have to see people very often. You have to see them often because they're unwell, which is the unfortunate part. But you really form these strong relationships with them. And I love that. Other areas of medicine weren't like that. So I hung out there throughout all of my education and then even into my working life after school. But it was just really heartbreaking because none of the lifestyle interventions, which were all standard protocols, were doing anything. It just seemed like we were making people more and more sick. And I thought, okay, you need to take a year and figure out what you're going to do with your life. I was planning on going to medical school. I thought maybe you should just go to law school. That way you don't have to worry about emotions so much. Just be a corporate lawyer like your father. And it's just cut and dry. And I also thought I need to take care of my own health because when I was 12, I was diagnosed with fatty liver disease and 14 polycystic ovary syndrome. And and this horrific family history of cardiovascular disease. When I was younger, these diseases that I had, fatty liver and PCOS, are typically thought to be diseases of obesity, but my BMI was classified as underweight. So doctors, specialists, even some of the best in the world, we were very fortunate, told my parents that, hey, these are diseases of obese people. Your daughter's not obese. It's super weird that she has them. And hopefully she'll just grow out of them. The PCOS aspect, that worried me because my doctor told my parents, you know, she's not going to be able to have kids. You guys have resources. When she's 20, freeze her eggs, freeze a bunch of them. So she has the option of surrogacy as she gets older in case she wants kids. And I just remember her saying this in front of me to my parents. So that was quite devastating because I've always, you know, from a toddler wanted to be a mom with my baby dolls.
It's so interesting because that is so unusual to be diagnosed at those ages with those conditions. And usually it's people who are heavy, and because they're heavy, they haven't been able to diagnose those. They don't, in women in particular with polycystic ovarian syndrome, it's really difficult to get the diagnosis. So by that time, you've gained the weight and, you know, sort of the damage is done and it becomes more and more difficult and somewhat cyclical. So I suppose as absolutely petrifying as this was, that you had it so oddly, it seems like, you know, and truly devastating to you and bewildering as a very, you're a young kid, you know, you had, it was pre-pubescent, it seems like, you know, or just on the cusp, and so scary. But I suppose that is what helped you find the solution for you.
Yeah, when it didn't stop. When I was 27, in that year I took for wellness, I got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I wasn't going to accept it. I know I had a family predisposition. My grandmother wasn't diagnosed until her 80s. My father wasn't diagnosed until his 50s. It didn't make sense. I was diagnosed in my 20s. So my colleague, Dr. Jason Fung, he was also kind of in the same boat of frustration as I was when it came to career choices. He became a doctor to help people, not just to watch them die. And he had coincidentally ran into a friend who had started fasting for religious reasons following a separation, but reversed her prediabetes and lost a bunch of weight, and her liver markers improved. And this got Jason thinking about all of our Ramadan patients and how every year before Ramadan, we would have to adjust their medications because their blood sugars and blood pressures would get better. And when Ramadan ended, when they celebrated with Eid and resumed back to regular eating, we would have to add all those medications back. So we started first and foremost looking at it from a religious perspective. Why is fasting incorporated in every major religion in the world? And then he learned that it wasn't just spiritual practice. There were deeper healing practices. So we began discussing this, and I began fasting, and 6 months later, no fatty liver, no PCOS, and no type 2 diabetes, and I had lost 60 pounds. I was very much underweight until my late 20s, my mid to late 20s, and then I had gained some weight while trying to follow all of the right guidelines to maintain good health.
while doing your damnedest to be healthy, you gave yourself diabetes.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's what following all of the rules did to me. So, you know, no wonder we have this huge epidemic going on.
So exactly what your book is called, The Essential Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women. For me personally, I'm more interested in the sort of older woman's thing. And I was getting concerned that as a menopausal woman, I wouldn't be able to lose weight. And I did follow this thing like don't eat until 1:30. So basically I was 1:30 and then I just eat normally, you know, sort of low carby and whatever. And I have been able to lose and maintain the loss of that weight. Can you talk to me a little bit more about different ways of fasting and for what, for whom, for etc.
Sure. So most individuals, in order to lower that insulin long enough to access our body fat and to make an improvement in metabolic health, we have to fast for about 24 hours. All of the data shows and all of our clinical experience shows that's really when insulin starts to fall enough for the magic of fasting to happen. So many people are stopping short of that at these popular 16 or 18 hour fasts that we see splashed across the cover of magazines. That can work for someone who's got maybe a couple pounds to lose, who doesn't have metabolic illness. It's a great thing to practice on a regular basis to maintain your health status, but not necessarily to improve it. So most of the women that we work with are postmenopausal. The great thing about postmenopausal women is that we don't have all these weird monthly fluctuations in hormones that force us to eat differently and to fast differently at different times of the month. That's a perk. This is the first time that we can follow a therapeutic approach similar to our male counterparts without all these nuances and additional complications. And we can get the same results as them as well. So that's one thing that our population really loves. If they start this with a partner or significant other who's a male, they tend to be able to keep up with their significant other during this, which is nice. So we'll typically take a 6 month period and have this individual do those more therapeutic lengths of fasting 2 to 3 times a week. So sometimes they'll do a 24-hour fast, which would be, say, from dinner tonight until dinner tomorrow night. Sometimes individuals elect to skip that dinner and then eat the following day, and that results in a 30 to 42-hour fast, depending on how many meals a day that they eat. A woman will do this again 2 to 3 times a week for about 6 months, and that's really all you need. After that 6 month period, you can resume sort of doing those popular 16 or 18 hour fasts and maintain your great weight loss and improved health.
Wow. So, of course, you at the beginning of this interview, you made a big point of saying this is not starvation. This is, timed and for the purposes of improved health and weight. But of course, then there are people going to be concerned about anorexia, etc. So, how do you help people sort of maintain a healthy mental attitude towards this, and so that things, that they eat normally when they're supposed to eat and not binge and purge, like getting into that whole cycle.
Well, it's very difficult for someone to binge and purge. I go into the deep physiology of this in the book. But we're really providing ourselves with plenty of fuel from our fat stores. I remember the first time I actually did a 3 day fast. I had mentally romanticized this meal that I was going to have, and then I could only eat about half of it. It was very disappointing. But my hormones were all improved. My appetite was down, and I had provided my body with plenty of fuel during those 3 days to my own fat. It was a very successful fast in that respect. So I ended up having leftovers for lunch the next day, which was fine. But physiologically, it's very difficult to binge, especially if you're focusing on eating a diet of a real foods that aren't processed or refined. It's hard to binge on those in a regular day. You can hear someone say they ate an abundance of pasta, but how many people do you hear say they ate an abundance of salmon and Brussels sprouts? You don't catch that very often. So what you eat definitely does have an impact. So we focus with women, educating them on that as well. When it comes to eating disorders, so I was someone who had a very disordered view of food my whole life. My grandmothers and great aunts praised me for being so thin despite being sick growing up. They ridiculed cousins and other people in my family and comparison to myself. I would get dragged on the weekends. I'd stay with them while my parents were traveling. I get dragged to Weight Watchers meetings. They started to tell me when I was preteen about counting calories so I could maintain my slender figure as I got older, because it's quote unquote next to impossible as you get over the age of 30. So might as well learn all of the calorie counting skills now. So I was quite terrified of food growing up. I had an uncle die when I was 9 from his third heart attack from not having a healthy lifestyle. So it was, my whole life, I felt like food was the enemy. And now it's so incredible because I'm really in the driver's seat. You know, if I want to be a certain healthy weight or however I control it, the food doesn't control me. And I think for so many of us, the food controls us. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, if I do elect to have ice cream on a hot summer day, I can always voluntarily do a bit of fasting the next day to burn off any of that excess fuel. So I have this fabulous relationship with food. I now what you would be call a foodie, and also learning what to eat and making sure that I am fueling my body with all kinds of an abundant of nutrients and micronutrients, and that I can really eat as much of that as I want and maintain my weight status and my health status. So for me, it's been so liberating. And I hear this from women all the time. I mean, I work with tons of women in their 60s who started their first diet as a preteen and have been dieting their whole lives. It's been their whole hobby. And they almost have an identity crisis because they don't need to diet anymore. You know, what are their hobbies going to be? Who are they going to be? because they don't have to worry or think about this anymore. And they have this fabulous relationship with food nowadays.
I say one of the things that I thought so interesting, and the tagline of the book is balance your hormones to lose weight, lower stress, and optimize health. And I think so many so many roots of disease are the imbalance of hormones, or and stresses. We're learning so that is so much inflammation, etc. And what we eat and how we eat is so fundamental to taking care of ourselves. And that's it's such a joy to hear you say that's in your hands, you know, and now you feel like your health is in your hands, and how you choose to eat and when you choose to eat is in your hands. And I think we can also say we're very excited to say that news that you were given you were 14 was wrong, because now you're pregnant.
Yes, we did have a bit of a hurdle to get here because I had low ovarian reserves as a result of my PCOS. So we had to bank some embryos to make it possible for us to have a family. But I am in the middle of my second trimester with a baby boy who's doing really well. Mom didn't do so well her first trimester here. But I am so grateful for this opportunity that they all said was going to be impossible.
Exactly. Well, I love you're not only beating the odds for yourself, but you're also really helping people because the type 2 diabetes that there's such an endemic and epidemic of is, as you saw as a young person working in this clinic, is so injurious to your health. And it just, again, builds upon builds upon builds upon and creates situations that your body finds very, very difficult to come back from, especially as you're getting more and more dependent on, you know, outside drugs and interventions. It's just very, very exciting work, and that it's in our hands and it's very simple. It's not going to solve all the problems in the world. However, you know, if we can balance a few hormones, I know everyone around here would be happy if cortisol levels were a little lower. It helps everyone. Anyway, so I would encourage everyone. And also, I also wanted to mention that your old friend, Dr. Jason Fung, has written forward for your book. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, we've been a tag team for a long time now. And I'm so grateful for all of the work that we've done together. It's been quite the journey, and it's so great to see this book and this guide, you know, not just the why, but the how, finally make it out there. It has been a long journey to get it out, but it feels fabulous, and I hope it helps a lot of people.
Well, and I'm also one of the things you do talk about, the guide of, you know, things to do, prepare for when you're going to fast, and things you need to do during the fast, and hydration is a big one. But I noticed that tea and coffee are still on the list. So it is possible I'm going to get to it with that very helpful thought in mind. Anyway, again, I would encourage you to get The Essential Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women by Megan Ramos. Megan, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today.
Oh, thank you so much, Donna, and happy fasting to everyone who's listening.
And for more fascinating women, please go to www.radiogorgeous.com.